Now we get to the good part. It is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Let's please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Jake.
Just move it out a little bit. Perfect.
Hi, my name is Jake, and I've been sober for about 460 days. And so this is my first time doing a speaker's meeting where I'm actually up here and not in the crowd, so pardon my nervousness. And I remember when I first came to my first meeting, and I wasn't really there for under my own willingness, so I understand, you know, if that's if you're here for that as well. So my home group is the 6:45 a.m. Friday men's attitude modification meeting at Cafe 210 on Center Street. Love to have you join. And a little background from Bakersfield. Originally moved here in 2012. So my hope for tonight is that by sharing my story, my struggles and my fears and my the shame that I had with alcoholism, that from my experiences, you know, you can find some solace, comfort, and maybe relate to mine. And also that, you know, you're not alone. I spent many years hiding my alcoholism and was very surprised to find out there were a bunch of people just like me in this group called AA. And also, you know, from my experience, I hope you realize there's a better way of dealing with alcoholism than trying to control it. And that really the only thing that works is this program, AA. It's amazing how beautiful and successful this program is. So I wanted to say a quick quote by Charlie Munger. He said that the sweetest lessons learned are those learned from the experience of others, and the bitterest lessons are learned from our own experiences. So my hope is that you can take my bitter experiences and have some sweet lessons learned from my experience. So as you likely know, the format is, you know, what it used to be like, what happened, and what am I like now. So before I stopped drinking, my life was ruled by fear and shame. Just the fear of the thought of not drinking terrified me. It was much more nerve-wracking than being up here today. I thought my life would be over if I didn't drink again. And the other thing that ruled my life was shame. I felt guilt and shame for not being able to control my drinking, and I spent an enormous amount of effort trying to hide my drinking from others. So even though I could hide it from others, I was pretty good at hiding my drinking, I couldn't hide it from myself. And that's the irony of shame, is that, you know, I'm still aware of my own shame, and I can't really fool myself. So, and I also had a lot of shame of, you know, wasting away my most productive years drinking. You know, it consumed me in every facet and aspect of my life. So I'm still working through the guilt and shame, but you know, much better than it was when I'm drinking. AA is a much more constructive way to deal with life than the bottle. I know that the bottle didn't work for me. And if you're here, it probably didn't work for you either. So I'm not ashamed today, though, to stand up here and say that I'm an alcoholic, that I'm powerless over alcohol, that I'm nervous to be speaking tonight. This too shall pass. And that my life is much better than I ever imagined it would be while I was drinking. It's not always easy being sober, but it's a much better life than I had with the bottle. I also use drinking to escape reality. But in truth, drinking only worsened my reality, and then I just drank more to escape from that reality, and it was just a vicious circle of destruction that didn't get better until I decided to be willing to give up drinking. So I started, like most of you, drinking in high school. I remember, though, before high school, I went to this survival school, and me and other friends decided to take an oath to not drink. And that didn't last very long, maybe 6 months, until I started high school and found out how cool drinking was. I took that oath because I grew up in an alcoholic family, and I was hurt by my father's drinking. And so I thought, this is stupid. Why would I ever want to go down that same path? Sure enough, though, I was right down that path in less than a year. I was pretty successful from all outside appearances. I was able to, get good grades, drink, party, have a good time. I got accepted to a competitive college across the country. And I went there just to escape, my life here in Bakersfield, and thought that I would, could start over in a sense. But I joined a frat and, won the beer pong tournament and, became a professional drinker. Like some of you, I had, blackouts in high school. But all in all, I was able to manage. So the real consequences to my drinking first caught up with me, I think, in 2004. Living in San Francisco, done with college, partying with a bunch of college buddies, had a beautiful girlfriend that I eventually married, but I get really bad hangovers. So I was taking aspirin or Excedrin almost every morning for the headaches. And that led to an ulcer in my stomach. Was hospitalized, lost half of my blood. And my family asked, why were you taking so much aspirin? Of course, I lied and didn't say that I was taking aspirin for headaches and hangovers. Just the pattern of guilt and shame just continued. So in 2007, I was married. I hid the true quantity of my drinking from my wife. She didn't have any idea. I just thought that I drank a lot in college. In 2009, I was in grad school back in Washington, D.C., others had some concern over my drinking, especially my wife. And so I went to my first AA meeting. I remember it vividly. I stood in the back of the room. I didn't talk to anyone. I thought this group was crazy. I thought I was different. I wasn't like these people that said they were an alcoholic and couldn't control their drinking. I just thought that I lost control once in a while and could continue down my path. But, in thinking back on it, I wasn't willing and open to the message of AA. powerless over alcohol, turn my will over to a higher power. I was, you know, like, what the hell does this mean? So I went to one meeting and, you know, calmed the fears of my family and took up the bottle again. So, you know, the saying, you keep coming back, it works if you're working. Well, I went back to the bottle, so... I just wasn't ready to give up drinking at that point in my life. I thought, I'm too young, I'm still in good health and having fun drinking, and what fun would it be not drinking? But, you know, in reality, looking back, you know, being dependent upon a drug that made me stupid and hungover wasn't fun at all. I was just fooling myself. And really, the beauty of this program is all that I really needed at that time was to be willing and open to the message. Not this half-hearted approach of, oh, well, I'll go to one meeting, see how it is, intellectualize it, take a little bit of it, and go on with my life. There is no doing AA halfway. You got to jump into the game. And you won't stay sober unless I know I won't stay sober unless I'm fully engaged in this program. So then in 2010, after grad school, moved to Australia and had a long commute by foot and train. And sure enough, you know, the daily drinking continued. You know, before, after I got in the train, would, you know, have a beer. My favorite was Tui's. The one complaint I have about Australia is their beer is very expensive and very low in alcohol. So, I mean, a six-pack there is, like, a Coors Light would be $20-$25 at the store. So it was an expensive habit there. So I'm there in Australia working, by all outside appearances, doing fine. My wife and I had fertility issues. We were trying to have kids while we were there. We thought it'd be cool to have a kid in Australia. That never happened. But I knew that drinking wasn't helping us get pregnant. But despite that, I still continued drinking, and I lied to myself that it wasn't that big a deal and that it wasn't a priority, but drinking was my priority. And in 2012, moved back to the Valley, take a job with a company here in Visalia. I had a lot of travel with that job, and, you know, just the effort that went into hiding my drinking at social functions related to work just was enormous amount of effort. I forged my expense accounts to cover up that, you know, that was a bar tab, not something or other else that was related to work. And then, you know, I still feel regret for, you know, the many times that I drove back from the Fresno airport just wasted and thinking now, like, gosh, I could have hurt somebody or gotten in an accident. Luckily, that never happened. So in 2014, we were finally successful at having a child, and I remember just hours after the baby was born, and then, you know, middle of the night, it's 2 or 3 in the morning, hadn't had a drink that day, was very agitated. So I decided to go to dinner and found a 24-hour liquor store and bought a bottle. And I thought at the time, I was like, geez, this is such a low point. I can't even enjoy the birth of my child without having a drink. And, you know, being fully present. I wasn't present. I was consumed by alcohol. So, but nonetheless, I kept drinking. In 2015, hit my low point and decided to be responsible and grow up. So my low point was around me getting life insurance for the family. I thought, okay, you know, I have a child and one more on the way and a wife that are dependent upon me. Let me get some life insurance in case anything happens to me. So you fill out an application for life insurance. It has a portion on alcohol consumption, which I clearly lied about. And but they give you a blood test too, and the blood test didn't lie, and my liver enzymes were just destroyed, and they rejected me. I thought, oh my goodness, I'm 35 and healthy by all appearances, and I just got rejected by a life insurance company. You know, meanwhile they're accepting people that are, you know, 75 or whatever, and here I can't even get life insurance. So I hid the results from my family for a few months and just deferred the inevitable of saying that I got rejected. And finally, one day, I was terrified that I was drinking and destroying my liver. So I took the blood results to a doctor here in Visalia, and he looked at the results and he said, "Oh, your liver's not that bad. I'm surprised they rejected you." And so what did I do that day? I went out and got a bottle and celebrated. And just looking back on it, what a crazy, powerful disease this alcoholism is, that I'm destroying my liver, but not that much. So I go out and I get drunk. So that night, the burden of drinking was just continually getting heavier and heavier. And so that night I had one too many. Normal for me was, you know, having alcohol in my system. And my wife came home. I was babysitting our little one and saw that I was totally drunk. And I just decided then and there that it was time, and I was finally willing to admit that I had a drinking problem. The pain of continuing drinking was worse than the terror of the thought of not drinking. So I admitted that I had a drinking problem and told my wife and family how much I'd been drinking. And their response was, "Well, why don't you go to rehab?" And at that point, I was willing to do anything. And so I went to rehab. I go to check in, and the lady says, 30 days. And I said to her, "Well, don't you have a 10-day program? I can learn this quickly. I can read quickly. Come on, like, what's the condensed version of this program?" I didn't realize that I wasn't there to get knowledge. I was there to break 15, 20 years of habits of trying to solve my problems with a beer, drinking in pleasure and pain and, you know, whatever emotion that I had. I was there to learn how to live my life and live a real life. Rehab was the best decision that I ever made. It was certainly humbling. I wouldn't want to do it again, and certainly not pay for it again. Drinking's an expensive habit. I'm sure you all realize that. It costs a lot of money in many ways. But there, while in rehab, I learned that I wasn't alone, and was finally turned on to the message of AA. And really got into it, and finally willing to admit that I'm an alcoholic and turn my will over to a higher power. So since then, I haven't had any alcohol, and could have never imagined that life would be as good as it is today. I'm still continually pleasantly surprised that it's not that bad not having a drink. And when I see people drunk, they don't really encourage me to have a drink, but I see how I acted, and I think, gosh, like, I can't believe I was like that much of my life. You know, after after some time being sober, the anxiety and, as my wife called it, neuros slowly dissipated. And I was highly agitated when I was drinking, and still pretty wound up tightly, but, you know, not nearly as tightly as I was when I was drinking. And, you know, there's times now that it's discouraging being sober, that I can't just have a beer like the normies out there. But, you know, there's more to life than having another drink. And the thought of all that would be associated with having another drink helps me not pick up that next drink. So in this program AA, you know, initially I thought it was a crazy program, very simple in concept, but, you know, difficult in execution. It takes work, and, you know, one thing that I've learned is that the principles of AA aren't meant to be received passively. You can't just learn them and then go about your life. You have to experience them. And, you know, the side benefit of AA is the tools you learn in this program, which are free, but you can use them in other parts of your life. I use AA principles in all facets of my life. And, you know, it's a beautiful program. The other thing that I need encouragement, inspiration once in a while. And when it seems daunting being sober, yeah, I look at my two children and I think, you know, God created them in their intended natural state, and they don't need alcohol or booze to be social. You know, for them, no alcohol is needed to cheer them up. No alcohol is needed to help celebrate. No alcohol is needed when throwing a temper tantrum. And no alcohol is needed to be more social. So I look at them and say, if they can do it, if a two-year-old can do it, I think I can do it too. It's a lot easier for her, though, but I'm right there with her. So one of the things Bill H., who asked me to speak tonight, asked me to talk about was the spiritual aspects of my recovery. And to be honest, I struggle with the spirituality aspect of this program. You know, it not in the sense that I don't believe there's a God or a higher power, but in the sense that it's so spirituality. Who can really define or explain what spirituality is? You know, it's intangible. It's ethereal. You can't really link the cause and the effect. And it's so unique to each person. You know, what I would define it as is going to be different than, you know, another person. But I don't, despite the struggle with the spirituality aspect of it, I don't dismiss those concepts. You know, they're a core part of the program. And, you know, we are granted a daily reprieve from alcoholism based on maintaining our spiritual condition. So the way that I look at the spirituality aspect of the program is that it's meant to be experienced. You're not going to learn it. You got to experience it. And I liken my spirituality to that of a preschool toddler's understanding of mathematics. You know, a toddler can't just jump from preschool math up to high school math. They have to experience grade school first. So I use that analogy when thinking about my spirituality. I'm still in preschool and learning the basics, but experiencing it along the journey. And there's three things that help me with the spirituality of the program. The first, just being open to receive. You know, it takes willingness on my part to change my attitude about spirituality. I was very turned off to the concept of God, thought I knew everything, and was not not open to it. So just being open to receiving a higher power will benefit me, you, and in many other ways than just spirituality. And then the other thing that helped, the second thing that helps me is somebody told me to, or I think it's in the Big Book, to be quick to see what is right with religious people. I was the first one to find fault in their thinking, their logic, and I realized that that gets me nowhere. So I try to see the positive aspects of what somebody, a religious person, is saying, and not just look at what's wrong with what they're saying. And then the third thing is just surrendering is a powerful concept. So I can get power and control over things by surrendering my control. I know it kind of sounds ass backwards, but it works. It's the same thing in love. Like, if you're vulnerable to your partner, you're going to get love. If you're closed off, you're not going to get love. So surrendering my power and control to a higher power is very helpful. And I've learned through 20 years of drinking that I can't control my drinking, so I have to turn it over to a higher power. And so that's what helps me with the spirituality of the program. But I really hope that by me sharing, you'll relate to some aspect of my story. It's different than all of yours. I enjoy hearing other stories, and I hope that you got something out of this. And I'm open to questions. Is it almost time? Or?
You did a great job.
Okay. Thanks, Danielle. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good job.
Thanks.